And it was really simple. It was you got to have the leader has to have a vision, a clear vision about where they want to take the team, and then you got to have the right people in the right job. And so, you know, why do we need to change? Well, it really revolves around one of those three aspects. You know, have we got the right people? Fantastic. Are they in the right job? Are they comfortable with what they're doing, or is there something bigger and better for them? And then the ultimate is, of course, where are we all heading to, and does everybody understand and share that vision? And I think this is one of the biggest failings of a lot of small business owners. You know, one person starts something off, they grow quickly, they get a couple of employees. It just doesn't kind of work. And I think they know where they're going, but they haven't been able to share that with their people. And I see it so many times in larger organizations as well, that the leader is very clear, but the staff don't share the same clarity of the leader's vision, and they can't get on board because they don't know what to get on board to or with.
Now sit back and relax while we take a deep dive and talk with inspiring business owners just like you. Here's your host, Stephen Sandor.
Welcome to the Inspiring Business Podcast, where we hope to inspire you as the business owner and help you to focus on what you do best so you can delegate the rest. A business has greater value by being independent of its owner, and we say get your business ready for sale so you don't have to sell it. That way you can retire into your business. My guest today is Lindsay Adam, and he's been known over the past 20 years as the relationship guy. Lindsay is an international speaker at conferences. He delivers training seminars and workshops and consults to leading organizations like Standard Chartered, Linfox, and Rio Tinto, just to name a few. In 2020, Lindsay was recognized by the Australian government in the Australia Day Awards with an Order of Australia Medal for his services to the professional speaking industry. Lindsay, welcome to the Inspiring Business Podcast.
Thanks, Steve. It's an absolute joy to be here.
But maybe we could start with how you ended up where you are today.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Maybe I'll give you the potted history of Lindsay Adams. 23 years in the public sector. Started my career in the Australian Taxation Office once upon a time. First half of my career in audit. You name it, I've done it, serving summonses, collecting debts, auditing books of account, all the nasty stuff, whacking people over the head with a big stick. Had some truly interesting adventures along the way there, serving summonses. On the summons, we got the ones that the bailiffs couldn't serve. On the summons, it states the purpose, the person's occupation. And I got this summons one day, and the occupation was stud, S-T-U-D. And I thought, I have to meet this man.
And I was wasn't really, me, was it?
His name wasn't Sandor. I was really disappointed when it turned out he was a student. Anyway.
So you were disappointed.
Yeah. I went on a manager development program when I was in audit, and it was a 9-month extravaganza. We started off with a week's residential workshop at Bribie Island at a nice resort there. We did a 3-month work placement. Second week's residential at the Byron Bay Beach Resort, 3-month work placement. Final week's residential at Stradbroke Island off the coast of Brizzy, 3-month work placement. And all the while we were doing a action learning project. And then we had a graduation ceremony, gave our report on our action learning project. So we had three different facilitators at the residential workshops. Third facilitator, end of day one, says, okay, boys and girls, we're done. Dinner's at 7, see you at the bar. Lindsay, have you got a minute? I went, sure. And I went up to this guy and said, how can I help? And he said, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm a team leader in audit. I got a bunch of auditors who work for me. He said, yeah, I know that. He said, but you're not like these people. You don't fit. Why are you here? Now, Steve, that question led to a 3-hour conversation, and the guy helped me understand I was in the wrong job. I'm not an auditor. I'm a hopeless auditor. I'm a people person. And one of my placements I did on that program was in training, and I went, wow, I like this. I'm good at this. And so I actually went sideways out of audit and into training, and that was over 30 years ago. And here I am today, you know, I've been solidly working on the people side of business ever since. So left the Australian Taxation Office, went to Queensland Health. I became the training manager for Sunshine Coast Regional Health, looked after three hospitals, 3,000 allied health staff. Didn't stay there all that long because I found out that time travel is possible, because I went backwards 20 years. It was a very primitive culture. Left them, ended up at Brisbane City Council, did my last 5 years in the public sector there, ended up as one of their senior HR people. I had a team of 17 consultants working for me, and we had this crazy system where we billed for our time. And so it was there I learned the art of consulting and, you know, how to pitch for a job, how to sell, how to deliver. You know, we had to put in 80% billable hours. And if anyone, any of your listeners have done billable hours, you know, that's a big number. Anyway, at the end of the first year, I went, wow, look at all this money I made. Well, I made, you know, I billed for the council. And at the end of the second year, I went, well, I reckon I could do this. And I did a coach training program late in 99. And I had a coach, and she said to me, this is about September, she said to me, look, you've been dabbling around, a bit of speaking, a bit of coaching, a bit of consulting. When are you going to get serious and do one? By the way, don't you hate questions like that? Anyway, I went back to her a week later and said, all right, I've had to think about this. I'm going to go, I'll work from the 1st of January 2000, I'll work permanent part-time for Brisbane City Council. So I worked for them 3 days a week. I worked for myself 2 days a week to see whether I could make this business thing work. By March, I knew it was going to work. By May, work was getting in the way of my business. And so I handed in my resignation. And on the 3rd of July in the year 2000, I began my full-time career as a full-time professional speaker, which was what I chose to kind of focus on. And that's 21 years ago. Absolutely amazing. And so I joined, along the way, I joined an organization called the National Speakers Association of Australia. It's now known as Professional Speakers Australia. And I had a couple of mentors there. And I made the transition out of government into my own business. And I initially did a lot of work, a lot of team building. From there, I morphed into manager development, leadership training. And then I bought a franchise business teaching business owners and salespeople how to do business by referral. I learned a good lesson with that. It turns out the owners of the business, the Americans who ran the whole show, were very good at do as I say, not as I do. Anyway, I got out of that, and I was under a non-compete for 2 years. And being an honourable person, I wanted to make sure that I held true to the contract. And so I wasn't allowed to teach anything about networking, referrals. I couldn't use those words. But what's the one thing that underpins all of that work that I've done, Steve? Teamwork, leadership, referrals, it's all relationships. And so I went, oh, well, I can teach relationship marketing, not referral marketing. And then a business friend of mine said, you know, Lindsay, you're so good at doing this referral thing, and you're so connected. You know, you're the relationships guy. And I said, what did you just say? You're the relationships guy. And I went, yeah, I am. And so, Steve, I jumped onto Google and found that all the URLs were available. So I bought them all and christened myself the relationships guy. And now that's my brand. I'm known as around the world. And so I focus on, you know, doing business by relationship. And because relationships pretty much underpins everything that we do when you think about it. So pretty long story, but that's sort of how I got to where I am today. I've had some amazing adventures along the way in my professional body, Professional Speakers Australia. I've been the Queensland State President. I've been the National President. I've been the International President of the Global Speakers Federation. And I've served those organizations, you know, quite heavily in the last 23 years. And on Australia Day in 2020, I was recognized by our government in the Australia Day Awards, and I was given a medal in the Order of Australia for my services to the professional speaking industry, which was just amazing, thoroughly, totally unexpected, and a really humbling moment, you know, just a wonderful recognition, which I, like I said, totally, I wasn't expecting.
Well, it's a recognition of service, isn't it? And over those many years. So, yeah, congratulations on that. There's a couple of areas there. One is the transition from a job into your own business. And it's interesting that you actually dipped your toe in the water, so to speak, just to see whether it would work. When you did that, was there an intentional strategy by you? Did you, you know, did you sit down and think through that whole process, or was it like the majority of us who just go, look, I think I could do it better, or there's the money there and I'll give it a crack and see how it goes?
Well, it's interesting. The guy who asked me the question, and you know, I mentioned about the asked me the question, what are you doing here? That was a real catalyst moment in my life. He then went on to become my mentor. And I said to him, I want to do what you do. And, you know, I loved his style of work and the consulting that he was doing. And it was really interesting that when I made the decision to leave government, was that decision a strategic, carefully planned, well thought out process? Absolutely not. But here's just one interesting little byline or segue story. When I went and told my mentor that I was leaving government to begin my own business, he said, congratulations, well done. That's it, we're done. I went, sorry, what? And he said, we're done. I can't be your mentor anymore. You'll now be my competitor. And I went, oh, come on, don't be ridiculous. And I haven't spoken to him since that day.
Is that right?
Yeah. And here's the really interesting thing, Steve. I've had a pretty nice career. I've done okay. I've had some wonderful achievements and, you know, I've rattled off a couple. And so, I don't know, somewhere down the track, I wanted to let this guy know what he had initiated.
Mm.
You know, he was the catalyst for change in my life. He absolutely was. He's disappeared. Can't find him. Not on LinkedIn, not on Facebook. Went to the house where I visited him many, many times. Doesn't live there anymore. Not in the phone book, disappeared.
Wow.
Pretty amazing. I told this story to an American friend who's a very religious person, and she said, oh, he was an angel. Now, you know, I say that flip. It depends on your spiritual beliefs, and, you know, that's a conversation for another podcast maybe, but, you know, he was certainly a truly big influence in my life, but it's just bizarre that he disappeared. And so circling back to your question, my answer is no. Long way to go, but no.
So over the years, you know, you moved into that training and leadership area, and the listener is, you know, a business owner who possibly had the same experience that you had, in that they thought that they could do something better. And the majority of my experience, the majority of people are, you know, there was nothing strategic about it. It's just that they decided that they thought they could do it better. But as we all know, running a business is not easy. And so there's mistakes along the way. So from your experience, either from stage where you've been, you know, talking to the audience or actually involved in businesses, what are your views on what are the main mistakes that business owners make as they try to move from a job, a freelance type role, to an enterprise?
Yeah. Well, you know, mistake number one is thinking that you're going to work Monday to Thursday and have a 3-day weekend every weekend. That was one of the things that I was going to do. Yep, I'm having a 3-day weekend.
Because you're the boss.
Uh-huh. I have done the 7 days a week thing, and I'm very disciplined now about the Monday to Friday thing. At Friday, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, I'm done. Like, you can send me a message over the weekend, and if it's urgent, I will respond. But, within reasonable, normal bounds, Saturday, Sunday, that's family time for me now. And I'm very, very good at picket fences. There's boundaries that you have to observe. So, make sure that you create some boundaries so that you have space for your rest and relaxation and recuperation, because you can burn yourself out real quick.
Yeah. If we can just unpack that a little bit, because obviously in this current environment, I've been doing a little bit of research into this space, and the biggest issue that small businesses have at the moment is around finances, and then people, the either hiring and keeping people or finding the right ones. And then the third is family and the guilt that you have when you're at work, not being at home, and then when you're at home, not being at work. I keep saying we as business owners need to be a little kinder to ourselves. But as you are in that very early stages, and I say the first 5 years is early stages of the business, you would have experienced this, the need for cash flow and being able to, having to work hard. So when you're further down the track and you have that stability, you have the ability to put the picket fences around it. So looking back, if you were to look back 15 years and talk to yourself as your younger self, what would be the advice that you would give yourself to prevent that stress, if you like?
Yeah, it's really interesting. The same mentor said to me, when I said I was going to start, he said, "You're married, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And at the time I was married, I had two young kids, and that's why I transitioned out of government, because I wasn't game. I had a mortgage, all the usual, bills, life, school fees, and I wasn't game to just cut it off 100% and go, I wanted to have some certainty of income. And he said to me, "You're married, you've got a wife." "Yes." And he said, "You must make sure that you bring your wife on the journey with you." And for anyone who's starting out in a business, this is, I think it's a critical piece. Bring your partner on the journey with you. And he said, "Look, you'll be on planes, flying to exotic destinations, running amazing workshops, and you'll be having, the time of your life, and your partner will be at home managing home affairs and could be very resentful if you don't take her on the journey." And I thought that was such a good piece of advice. And yes, I understand the guilt between being there and being here. And I my first 5 years, I had some amazing trips and, incredible, in beautiful resorts where I was facilitating workshops. And, I'd call home at night and, my smile on my face was 4 foot wide, the experience that I was having. And I had to be, I didn't lie, but I tempered. You've got to be careful about taking your partner on the journey. You've got to make them feel that they're part of this. That was a really big piece for me, that I could bring Debbie with me. I've got a line I use in one of my speeches. I've been married a long time, and it's true, I have, and happily so, and it's because of all the hard work that we've done on the journey together. And so when you're starting out, the picket fence thing, I still think you need to make time for family, for relaxation, because like you can burn yourself out real quick. It's really easy to overdo it, and your partner resents you, your kids resent you, and all on the chase.
I guess it was sort of born out of the 80s, when as a manager you had to be the first one into the office and the last one to leave, and yeah. otherwise what how could you be valued?
Yeah.
I know I was guilty of that. But at that point in time, I was single and footloose and fancy free, and so I didn't have anybody to feel guilty about. So other than my friends. But again, it's that whole, if you slow down, we now have this mindfulness, which is basically saying slow down so that you can recuperate and go again. Mm. So having that break, I think you're right. It's wise advice. And slow down so you can speed up.
Yeah.
So how did you transition then from this? Was it the natural transition from being a public speaker or running the training programs and then public speaking? So how did that come about?
Yeah, it's funny. When I talk about my history, people go, so you used to work in the tax office and now you're a conference speaker? How does that work? Well, I joined the National Speakers Association. And there's another funny story or an interesting story. I was in Sydney. I was down there for I was doing a neuro-linguistic training program, a programming training program. And I was staying at a friend's house. She and I, she worked in the tax office. We knew each other through work. And we're on the train heading into the city. And she said to me, I found this organization called National Speakers. Look at this. And she had a brochure and, look, to join and become recognized as a professional member, you've got to have done 10 paid speeches. Mm. And we both looked at each other and went, wow, 10 paid speeches. Like, it was just such a big moving target at that time. Anyway, I flew home to Brisbane, and I'm the youngest of five boys, no sisters in my family. Number two brother, he said to me, and he's a career public servant, and he said, look, I've been thinking about, where I'm heading, and I'll probably retire when I'm 55 and I'll be too young to stop working. So I thought, what am I going to do? And I found this organization called National Speakers. And I went, whoa, two people coming out from different directions. And anyway, they've got this workshop, and it's called How to Speak for Money. And it's a one-day event, and it was on in November. Now, it was cheaper for members than it was for guests, right? But the way their fees ran, if you joined up late in the year, you only pay it up until December, which was when they had an annual renewal. So we joined and paid our membership fee, and then we got the discount, and we still saved money on the day. So we went along as members, sat through the presentations for the day, and at the end of the day, I looked at my brother and he looked at me, and we went, well, what? That doesn't look all that hard, does it? How hard could this thing be? And that was really how I got involved.
Mm.
And from there, I went to my first ever national convention in the year 2000 in our nation's capital in March in Canberra. And I came home, and I'd been dabbling, I'd done a bit of this and a bit of that, a bit of consulting, a bit of recruitment stuff, and was sort of just doing whatever I could to turn a buck. But March was I came home and said to my wife, I found my place. This is what I want to do. I fell in love with this whole concept of presenting from the platform and holding the audience in the palm of your hand and taking on a journey to where, wherever they needed to go or you wanted them to go or whatever.
So what was your subject matter? So what was the journey that you were taking people on?
I started out as Australia's influence expert. I'd read a book by Robert Cialdini called Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion, where he talks about the six laws of persuasion. You probably read it yourself. Brilliant book. Still out there on the bookshelves. I recommend it to this day. And so I developed a piece around that and influence. And trouble was, I was no good at sales. I didn't know how to sell. That's a whole nother story. So then that didn't go so well. But what I did know was teamwork and team building. And I actually got some consulting work, worked for a couple of companies, did a lot of work in the power industry here in Queensland. And that was really kind of the footing, I guess, for where I went from there. And so I ran team building workshops and did a lot of stuff around that and have done a lot of work with people and really you know, people's my passion. And today I'm not doing so much speaking because of COVID. I've sort of pivoted, that dreaded word, pivoted, and I now I'm actually marketing a range of behavioral assessment tools to speakers, coaches, consultants, trainers, because I've used those assessment tools myself for the last 21 years, and realized that there's actually an income stream there, and so I'm now teaching others how to make money out of these behavioral assessments.
So if we could just circle back a little bit to the team building area that you work on, because that's an area that is dear to my heart as well, and helping businesses to move from that isolation to a group environment or the enterprise environment requires a team effort. Sometimes there's reluctance amongst the team because they're going, things are going okay. Why do we need to change? So what's been your experience in those situations, and what have you focused on to help the team to become, I guess, more cohesive, if you like?
I developed a simple model years ago called the Teamocracy team building model, and Teamocracy is the name of my business when I started out. And it was really simple. It was you got to have the leader has to have a vision, a clear vision about where they want to take the team, and then you got to have the right people in the right job. And so, you know, why do we need to change? Well, it really revolves around one of those three aspects. Have we got the right people? Fantastic. Are they in the right job? Are they comfortable with what they're doing, or is there something bigger and better for them? And then the ultimate is, of course, where are we all heading to, and does everybody understand and share that vision? And I think this is one of the biggest failings of a lot of small business owners. You know, one person starts something off, they grow quickly, they get a couple of employees. It just doesn't kind of work. And I think they know where they're going, but they haven't been able to share that with their people. And I see it so many times in larger organizations as well, that the leader is very clear, but the staff don't share the same clarity of the leader's vision, and they can't get on board because they don't know what to get on board to or with. And so, you know, I think having a really clear vision and then good communication, you know, communication is the lifeblood of teams. If you've got good communication going up and down the tree, you're never going to have a problem. And here's what happens in times of change. If people don't know what's going on, they just make stuff up.
Mm.
Where's Steve leading us? Well, I don't know, but I reckon he's going to blah, blah, blah. Well, if I knew, didn't know better, I'd think he's going to blah, blah, blah. Just making stuff up, you know? And that's what happens when the leader doesn't communicate enough. What's enough? Is there a prescribed number? No. As often as you possibly can, as many times as you possibly can. Now, based on, you know, simple behavioral styles, some people will get it really quickly. I do a lot of work with the DISC model. Four quadrants, D-I-S-C, dominant, influencer, steady, conscientious. The D's and the I's get it quickly, and they'll go and run. The S's and the C's, you need to tell them and retell them to bring them along on the journey. And even then, they'll still be a bit reluctant, you know. Well, why do we need to change? Exactly as you said. And it's about that communication and giving them comfort and giving them structure so that they understand why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm a great fan of they call them huddles now. In my day, it used to be a toolbox meeting because I was an electrician when I first started off in my very first job as an apprentice. And I joke often that, you know, I was sent to the store to find a left-handed screwdriver and a long wait. So depending on how cruel my team leader was, depending on where I spent my day,
But it was a real that communication. It was a daily communication on how were we going. You know, what did we get done yesterday? What are we doing today? And what do you need? So the support came from the leader of what it is that you need. And I think there's a element of that that's missing today in small businesses, that they just get involved in the doing, and there isn't, we talked about it earlier about, you know, slowing down and just taking that time. So in that area, what would be some practical tips that a business owner could apply to their daily cadence, if you like?
I'm a big believer in the team huddle. There used to be a show on TV called LA Law. Do you remember LA Law?
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of people on, it was on a long time ago. There's probably a lot of listeners who are going, well, I've never heard of it. So LA Law used to start off with, it was a law firm, and they'd start off around the conference room table with all the partners, and they would say, so what are you up to? And partner number one would say, I'm doing this, and partner number two would say, I'm doing that. And it was like a very quick update. But what it did, it actually set the frame for the show for the next however long it takes to run one of these shows, right? Now, so what I've been teaching my teams ever since is to do a 2-minute, or, well, really a 10-minute. You try and do it in two, but you can't. 10-minute stand-up huddle at the start of every day.
Yep.
And, you know, in the public sector, I started teaching this in the tax office, so it's a long time ago, you know, stand up, don't sit down. It's not a sit down meeting. It's a stand up, share what you're doing, what you've done and what you need to do, and then go and do it. Get on with it. But everybody knows in an instant or in just the space of a couple of minutes, what's been doing, what is doing and what has to be done. And I think that's critical. Now today, with the advent of technology, you and I are talking on Zoom at the minute. You can do it on Zoom, you can do it on Teams, you can do it on Microsoft Messenger, you can do it on FaceTime. There's so many different ways you can do it. You don't even need to be in the same room anymore. That is something I think we overlook and we underutilize. And so a quick 10-minute huddle at the start of every day, and I've even worked with organizations where they do it at the start and at the end of the day as well. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, the end of the day and then the start of the next day. But it's interesting what percolates in people's minds overnight. Sometimes, you know, I was just thinking about what you said yesterday afternoon, Steve. What if, you know, and so it just brings a different spin on it. Big believer on it.
Just a couple of other questions. If someone wanted to get in contact with you, how would they go about doing that?
It's pretty simple. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Facebook. You could drop me an email, and I'll give you the simplest one of all. It's really complicated. Listen carefully. It's lindsay@lindsayadams.com. And that's the simplest way. I've got others, but that'll get straight to me.
And you mentioned the DISC profile. Was that something that you're able to help the listener with?
Yeah, so I do a lot of work with the DISC profile. And you know, what's that old, you know, the old Gillette, I loved it so much I bought the company. Well, not quite, but I'm now a distributor of DISC and other behavioral profiles. And, you know, I'm very passionate about this. And if your listeners are interested and would like to have an experience of a DISC profile and understanding themselves deeper, I'm going to give it away. Okay. Just one. And there'll be some caveats around. I want to actually spend, you know, 30 minutes doing a debrief with the person, help them understand themselves better. But it is really powerful when you understand yourself and begin to understand why other people are different to you, and then how do you adapt to get on better with them? Because we can all work together. We just have to adapt that little bit. So drop me an email, lindsay@lindsayadams.com. And say, you know, I heard about your free offer on Steve Sandor's podcast. I'm interested. I'll be in touch.
Wonderful. I'll put that in the show notes, and I may be your very first requester of that.
Oh, for you, it's going to be double nothing, mate.
My final question, Lindsay, is, and I ask this of all of my guests, what are you curious about at the moment?
Oh, I'm curious about people. I said I'm not an auditor, I'm a people person. I love working with people. People are all we are also similar and yet we are also different. And so I'm a great people watcher, observer, and I'm going to say philosophizer. Maybe that's not the right word, but, you know, I'm curious about people, what makes them tick, and then how do I get on board with them? You know, I christen myself the relationships guy. Well, it came, I explained how, but I absolutely love the whole science of people and relationships. So that's what I'm curious about.
Thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been wonderful, and lots and lots of information in this conversation. I'm sure the listener will get so much from value from it. So,
well, I hope so. And thanks for having me, Steve. It's been great.
As Lindsay says, leadership is simple. The leader needs a clear vision so the team know where they are going. Then you need the right people in the right job. And the vision needs to be communicated effectively amongst the team. That creates a culture that encourages an open and honest relationship at all levels. And once this framework is established, deliver it in a caring and thoughtful way so you as the business owner are not the centre of the success. Here at Inspiring Business, we've created the Scale to Success system, a proven method to turn your business from a solo sport job into an enterprise that doesn't rely solely upon you. I offer an exploration call where we can have a conversation about your plans and objectives and what scaling means to you. Our mantra is get your business ready for sale, but don't sell it. That allows you to retire into your business. My name is Stephen Sandor, and there are plenty of additional resources on our website at www.inspiringbusiness.net, and we are across all the socials. Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Business podcast, and my wish, as always, is to inspire and energize you to take action so you too can make a difference in your and others' lives.